morning. You're listening to Sappy Fest Radio, CHMA 106.9 FM, on a beautiful sunny Wednesday morning. Against all forecasts, we have beautiful sun shining. It's warm. It's nice. Get out there. But not yet. Turn up your radios right now. We have music planned for this hour and a very special guest. I'd like to welcome my dear friend Nick Ferriero to the show. Hello, Nick.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, buddy. How are you?
Oh, great.
It's nice to talk to you. It's been a while.
To talk to you, too.
Where are you today, Nick?
I'm in Peterborough. I'm actually sitting down by the river.
Oh, nice.
It's a very sunny day. There's some construction workers digging a hole. You might be able to hear them.
I heard something, but I thought it was either
a
motorcycle or perhaps a motorboat. But it sounds
like there's a bunch of boats, but nobody seems to be going anywhere at this time of day.
Nice. And what's your day looking like, Nick?
Oh, you know, just living the dream. Yeah, not much. Just working away on a bunch of different things.
Awesome.
But trying to enjoy the nice weather while it's here.
Well, I wanted to say, first of all, how much we're looking forward to having you come back to Sappy Fest this summer.
Yeah, I can't wait. Super excited.
I suppose I should maybe introduce you a little more thoroughly in case some of our rabid listeners are unfamiliar with you. You perform as Nick Ferriero, a constantly developing project. Sometimes called Nick Ferriero and His Feelings, sometimes just called Nick Ferriero. Is that true?
Yeah, that's exactly kind of right.
And
that's like a singer-songwriter project, I guess.
And you also perform with Leanne Batasmasak Simpson.
Yep.
And you and Leanne and band will be performing at Sappy Fest this summer as well, which we're also thrilled by.
Us too.
And you have performed in the past with Burning Hell.
Yep, exactly.
And many other people, I would say.
Would
those be kind of maybe the main...
The main ones. The Wikipedia entry. Yeah.
Are you accusing me of simply reading your...
I think I'll probably end up playing with Burning Hell, too.
You will? Okay, wonderful.
Sappy. I don't know if I was supposed to let that cat out of the bag or not, but...
I don't think there's bags or cats in this conversation. I think we should speak openly and honestly. That's exciting. Awesome. I'd heard a couple different things from yourself and from Matthias.
We've been chatting about it. Not sure what I'll end up playing, but...
Sure.
It'll be a jam either way. It'll be fun.
I mean, you've played with the Burning Hell for years.
Over a decade.
And you're...
So, like, the songs, it's friggin' weird playing. I mean, you know this from playing in a band for a long time, but, like, some of those songs are, like, ingrained in somewhere that you didn't know was there inside of your brain or inside of your muscles or something. So, like... Yeah, Matthias was like, do you want to rehearse? And I was like, probably not. I think I've got them. And I just tried running through a bunch a couple nights ago, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's how that goes.
Well, that's exciting. That's
Yeah.
I mean, you're on a bit of a leave of absence, so you did not play on the most recent Burning Hell record, I don't think, right?
No, I didn't play on the most recent one at all, No.
I mean, all of... There's a couple lines of conversation here I'd maybe like to pursue.
Sure.
One is, and I guess most obviously from this conversation is the idea of collaboration. And just to lay all my interview cards on the table, the other thing I'm kind of curious about is, I would like to talk maybe about your previous experiences at Sappy Fest.
Mm-hmm.
But sort of in the context of this is Sappy Fest 13 we're coming up to. So the festival becomes a teenager this summer.
Totally.
So in many ways, it's still a young and youthful idea. It feels very worthwhile and new and exciting still. but we do have all this past behind us, and we have people like yourself who we're excited to welcome back, in some cases again and again. But we also, so we have both a tradition and a sort of impulse to new things. And for yeah. for you as a musician, performer, songwriter, you've collaborated with many people. You've made, you've released 3 of your own Nick Ferrio records.
Yeah.
As well as a bunch of singles.
So. Yeah, and, 3.
And yeah. I know that you've also made other things that have yet to come out or
totally.
So forth. So in a lot of ways, you know, we're in sort of a mid-career kind of moment,
yeah.
maybe.
Totally.
And I'm curious about your thoughts on just continuing to do things and maybe how your relationship to your music has changed, how the collaborations sort of fit into that. And I am asking a very, very long-winded question.
Oh,
here,
yeah. Right? No, but I think collaboration's been really, like, integral to what I do. I think, like, you know, when I first started making music, I had no skills, basically, and I was just really enthusiastic. So, like, coming into it from that perspective, like, I know there's a lot of bands where it's like, this person went to Humber Jazz School, and they're an incredible whatever oboist or whatever, but like I didn't have that background. I came from like just wanting to play music and being really excited about music and kind of sucking at guitar and sucking at bass and sucking at pretty much everything I was doing at the time, you know, but having that passion to do it and like really wanting to do it. So I think like through collaboration I've been able to learn a lot and to like develop as a musician and develop as a songwriter and develop as a instrumentalist or whatever, to the point now that I'm like, you know, I think I can, you know, I know how to play okay, I guess now, but like being more comfortable in what I'm doing and feeling more confident. And I think like playing with people like Matthias from the Burning Hell and Ariel from the Burning Hell and Darren from the Burning Hell, or playing with people like Chris Dirksen in Leanne's band. Chris Dirksen's like, if people don't know who Chris Dirksen is, she's an amazing Cree cellist who loops her cello. I kind of describe her like the Jimi Hendrix of cello. Like, she's not really afraid to experiment and kind of put the cello into places that most people can't even tell that it's a cello, you know? And so like playing with people of that caliber, or like having the experiences of playing, like when I played with you and playing with Will Kidman and playing with like, you know, a lot of different musicians and picking up things from them and allowing that, kind of being like a chameleon, I guess, you know, and sort of like absorbing little nuances from different people and kind of letting that, wash over me and kind of affect what I create, you know? So I think that's been really important. And I think Zappy as an institution has been really informative and important in my development. Like, I mean, I think I played Zappy, I want to say 2 or 3. That was the first time I was at a Zappy Fest. And I remember just seeing a lot of bands and kind of having that feeling of like, hey, I could do this. We're doing this. Like, you know, like, and feeling like a part of something that's bigger than just Peterborough where I live, and like realizing that there's a connected along the Trans-Canada. There's a bunch of different places that artists come from, and they're all kind of eventually drawn to Sackville for Zappy, and sort of feeling a connectedness to that. So, and I think through that, like, Zappy's led to a lot of collaborations too for me. Like, I recorded Jay Baird last year or 2 years ago when I just went, my family and I just went to Zappy to hang out and be there. And I was recording a record at that time and brought a bunch of gear with me, and like Jay Baird was there. He was playing with somebody, and he had his saxophone and had a bunch of other instruments. And I just kind of like took him away for an hour, and we recorded in Bucky's basement for like an hour, and that's on the record, you know? So it's like Zappy's it's a really great thing. And I think it's cool that it's a teenager, you know? I wonder if it's going to get any like weird piercings or anything this summer.
Well, we'll just have to wait and see, I think.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, and you've also recorded with Julie Dwaran.
Yeah, well. Oh, totally.
And was that here? I can't remember.
Yeah, that Julie I recorded in Sackville. Yeah, we recorded at the Vogue Theater.
That's right.
And then we recorded some at her house. And that was in 2015 or 14 or something in the winter. But yeah, and like I remember the first time I met Julie was at Sappy, and I was like, huge fan of Julie growing up as a kid. Like I had pictures of Eric's trip beside my bed, cut out from some magazine or something. So like, I remember meeting her and being like, just a total dingus. Mike Fierstack introduced us and I was like terrified, you know, it's like, oh, hello, nice to meet you. And I like kind of ran away super awkwardly. And then afterwards I realized I was like, what am I doing? They're just people. They're normal people doing this, trying to do the same thing I want to do.
I feel like so many of us
have. I'm really excited to be coming back, and I know that Leanne and the band are really excited to be performing too. We've been talking quite a bit about it, so we're thrilled.
Yeah, we're excited too. I think we did invite Leanne and you guys all last year as well, and it couldn't happen. But I think when I took this creative director role, Leanne was one of the first people I emailed to invite.
Yeah, that's cool.
You guys had, I think, more or less just released the record, Flight, and yeah, so you had invited me to the show in Toronto, and so I had just seen you guys perform, and
right.
Had just started to sort of become aware of Leanne's other work as well, and so I'm ecstatic that it's happening this year.
Yeah, she's really, really rad. I'm actually sitting at the park where her music first happened. So there's a park here called Del Prairie Park, which is right by the river, and there's this like bandstand I'm sitting right beside right now. And there was a festival in, I want to say, 2013 called Odomengezis, stands for Strawberry Moon Festival. So the Strawberry Moon happens pretty soon. It happens in June when the strawberries are in harvest. That's the full moon of the strawberry season. And so they have this festival, they had this festival called Odomengezis, and it was an indigenous arts festival. And they had a teepee set up in this park, and Leanne was doing a reading in the teepee. And on the big bandstand, Tribe Called Red were sound checking. And so Leanne was trying to read her poems.
Mm-hmm.
And this band is like sound checking, right? And it's super distracting from her really intimate, really quiet poem. And I was with her, and we had been talking about collaborating and stuff. And then in that moment, I was like, try to like just read them in time with what they're doing. And so she started to sort of read them in time over top of Tribe Called Red sound checking. And that was sort of the impetus afterwards. She was like, that was really cool. That was almost like hip hop and almost not like hip hop. Maybe that's what we should do. And that was sort of where the start of that came from, that project. So it's kind of cool to be talking about that project sitting in the same space.
That's a wonderful background story. And it's also very funny because the record and the music you guys have gone on to make, has very little relationship to hip hop or the type
totally.
Of sort of electronic dance music that Tribe Called Red tend to make.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, it's definitely different. I mean, Leanne's really into a lot of different music, but yeah, we definitely, I guess that's the root of it, you know, is like just trying to figure out how to like make the poetry work over top of, the sounds that we're creating. So yeah, we're starting to work on a new record, and we've been writing a little bit for it. And I'm excited to see where that goes, because the work is like the written work is super, super powerful. And it's been really fun to sort of collaborate on that.
That's awesome. Yeah. I would like to recommend to any of our listeners to both listen to Leanne Batasmasak Simpson's record, but also to read her books. They're all incredibly illuminating, challenging, beautiful, and totally, totally worthwhile of your time to expand your mind. I just had a thought, though, about that that sort of secret influence of hip hop as an instigator.
Yeah.
Because I spoke to Kevin Howes last year.
Yeah.
Kevin, who curated and sort of put together the Native North America Volume 1 compilation. And we had Willie Thrasher here at the festival last year. And Kevin, in speaking about that project, like, he was led to that through like a lifetime of study of music and interest in music. But he was, his original sort of inspiration for essentially crate digging was from a love of hip hop. So he would, you know, he was a DJ and he was a kid that loved hip hop music. And so he got into the habit of like looking through record bins for cool things that he could use for beats or for loops or whatever. And then through a lifetime of development and expanding interest, he was essentially collecting all the CBC recordings and like the sort of small press runs of that stuff that became Native North America, which obviously has no surface connection to hip hop whatsoever, but that was part of the original sort of habit development or the background of that, which is fascinating.
Yeah, that's super cool. It's really cool because if you think about how collaboration works in a similar way, like when we, with the Leanne's project, for instance, like we tend to write, at least for the last record, Leanne would come to us with a poem and then like it would be sort of finished, like maybe a rough draft or something. And then we would try to create like music around it. But you never really know where it's going to end up going once you introduce it to Chris Dirksen or you introduce it to Ansley Simpson. And then it would go off in these different directions. And like, it might've started like a lot of the stuff I was really at that point, really obsessed with like John Fahey and like a lot of that sort of finger picking guitar kind of stuff. So I really wanted to like kind of put that influence on it. And then like the songs totally took a giant turn. Like they turned, some of them turned into more like synth based kind of things. And then once we started getting into the studio, they totally switched. So like, it's kind of cool to think like the stuff that Kevin was looking for, you know, he might've been looking for hip hop tracks to like DJ at a club night or whatever. And then he discovered this whole other space, this whole other sound, you know. Cool anecdote to share also about the Native North American gathering. We played one at Megafono Festival in Ottawa, and Kevin had helped coordinate that. And it was like such a crazy bill, like such an amazing bill, like the so many great artists. And we learned a cover by Willie Dunn, who's an artist that's on that compilation and has put out a bunch of really great records. And so we were doing sound check, and you know, it's like every normal sound check, you like load in and you're like, okay, we have to, this, why is the sound check so early? This is such a pain in the butt. Like, I wish we didn't have to be here at 3. The show's not till 9. Why are we here so early? And then we load in and it's all the artists. There's no one else except for the sound tech and all the artists. And they were like sitting in the front row, like waiting for us to do our sound check. It was so nerve wracking. Like, it was more nerve wracking than the concert was. It was like all these sort of elder artists who've like paved the way for people like us to come make music. And, you know, like they played like since the 60s and some earlier than that, and they're all kind of waiting, and like we're, you know, trying to get through our songs in the sound check way. And then afterwards they like gave us like a mini standing ovation and we're like clapping and stuff. And it was really cool to see like the type of support that they had. And I mean, all these artists are coming from all over Turtle Island to that show, and it was really special. It was very, very funny too, because we were like, well, now we're not nervous for the real show. Like, we kind of got through a more intense version during soundcheck.
Your private performance for Duke Redbird.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like, oh my goodness, like, well, Alan East Obomsawin is like sitting right in front of me. I'm like, don't mess this up. She's like, and like, it felt like we were kind of being like it was like a, you know, like Native North American idol or something. Like, we were trying out for something.
It was
they were just
audition.
All sort of like watching us, like, what are these young people doing? And we were like, oh, I hope we don't screw this up. But they were such sweet people to work with. And it was really an honor that Kevin asked us to play that show. Like, what a total treat to be in their company.
Well, I had the great pleasure of being at that show, and it was extraordinary. And the cover of I Pity the Country that you're referring to, that you performed, was extraordinary. But that connection that was made that day between the elders and the younger musicians, including yourselves, like, that was a very powerful and inspiring thing to see. And the Native North America project was I think put together, I think it's fair to say, as like a historical document and as like a way to present things from a while ago, even though some of the performers like Willie Thrasher and Willie Mitchell and many of them are still performing. So it was very clear that the work continues, you know, and is embodied in different people. And that was extraordinarily beautiful to see, I have to say, as an observer.
Yeah, it was pretty special to be a part of it. Like, just even hanging out with the folks backstage, like, right before we played, like, Willie Mitchell, who I've loved his music for a long, long time, he was like, do you want to play guitar with me tonight? And I was like, yes, I really, really do, but I don't know how to play any of your songs. It was like 5 minutes before the show. Like, he's so casual and chill about everything. You know, he's like, oh, you got it. You got it. No problem. They're easy. And I was just like, you know, it's like a packed, I don't know how many people in the room. It made me super nervous. And I was like, it's so cool that he's just so confident in what we're doing that he would welcome us onto the stage with him and stuff, you know?
There was a remarkable relaxness about a few of those performances.
I mean, maybe it just gets easier the older you get or something. I was like, I want to feel that easy and breezy all the time. Like, you know, like Eric Landry, man, the guy's so incredible on the guitar. And he's just like, you know, he's just like as if it's nothing. Like, it was just like, yeah, it's second nature, you know. It's amazing to watch.
That's awesome. I had the pleasure of meeting him sort of briefly. I ran into him and John Bartlett, who organizes the Megaphono Festival in Ottawa, in the lobby, I guess, of the hotel. And they were off to somewhere that I hadn't intended to go. And John asked if I wanted a ride. And I thought to myself, this is probably the only opportunity I'll get to sit in a minivan with Eric yeah. Landry, so I don't really care where we're going. I'll go along.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. He's a really nice guy. He's actually kept in touch with Ansley quite a bit. So we've been chatting about doing some music with him at some point in the future, which would be really cool.
Wonderful. We've been playing Ansley's music a bunch on the show, and
oh, awesome.
And it's fantastic. Can't wait to see her this summer as well.
Yeah, she's amazing. I was just in Winnipeg at the Indigenous Music Awards, and she won Best New Artist, and she did a performance there. And yeah, she's awesome. She's an inspiration. She works so hard, and like, she kind of like lays, I don't know, she's really inspiring. She like laid it all on the line to like go after her passion, which I think is really, really admirable, you know. Like a lot of people, like, I know a lot of people that it's just hard to actually dive in the way she's done. And she works so hard and writes really amazing songs.
Absolutely.
Great.
I know you don't have a ton of time, Nick. I'd love to talk about some of your own music as well.
And, yeah, sure.
I mean, we've been sort of swapping stories, and I guess maybe a question to get you going is, I want to ask you about storytelling in your own music. The Nick Ferio solo project has developed and shifted through that process of learning, I imagine, that you've, you know, been describing.
Totally.
And it's started off as more rooted in folk and country, and has gone on a few different routes, and is currently more or less a garage rock and roll band, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
But through all that, there has been a doing a bit of a refresher on your records in the last couple of days in preparation for this conversation, I realized how much like there is sort of a through line of storytelling, and it kind of comes up sort of unexpectedly. And I'm thinking about songs like, you know, older works like Free Man Switzerlander, the Mary Hirschberger song, but even on your Soothsayer album, like That's How I Remember It, or That's Not How I Remember It, and there's a few that
that's
are
a
like
big part, it's a big part of who I am. I mean, like my family are all talkers. Everybody talks a lot. Christmas is loud, but yeah, everybody tells stories and shares funny anecdotes and turns the trivial into something worth remembering, I guess, and can kind of like, yeah. So like my Uncle Marty, who is my grandfather's brother, he passed away a couple years ago, but he was a really great storyteller, and he had a lot of really funny, and pretty much anything he did in his day was like noteworthy, and he would share with you. So it's just, I think, kind of just the way I interpret my experiences is through like creating a narrative, I guess. Yeah, and so I think in my music it's become kind of like the way I, a lot of the ways I like write songs is sort of thinking them, I'm thinking through story. I have a friend who once said like all songs are either stories or lists. And I thought that was a kind of a funny kind of true statement. I think I tend to write more story songs than list songs. But yeah, the most recent record, Soothsayer, has a bunch of stories on it, and but it's like a morphed sound from like a more of a folky acoustic kind of based sound, which I was doing for a long time, and I think that just like shifted. I just got into, I mean, I've always been into like heavier, like more rock and roll kind of sounding sounds, and also just like more punk kind of music, but I just don't think I ever had the confidence maybe to like do it in my own music or something. And I just felt like now is the time to turn on the overdrive pedal and keep it on.
You're taking the opposite route of the somewhat cliched path of the yeah. punk rocker going folk acoustic.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, sometimes it feels like I'm a salmon going upstream a little bit, but it's good. It's definitely been a transition. Like people are like, "Don't you do folk music?" And I'm like, "Used to," and I still know how to. I just don't really want to. And I think people are storytellers that play with like more of an electric sound. There's lots of them, you know, and like I've been really into Courtney Barnett's records, and like she's a really good storyteller, but she's playing really loud kind of rock and roll music. And yeah, I think that's sort of where I've sort of pushed away from more of a folky sound. I think also just like in terms of shows, I really like playing at like a loud, sweaty rock and roll kind of environment, and like a folky environment is cool too. And like a listening, quiet listening room is also really cool and really powerful. But lately I've been drawn to those smoky, or I guess not smoky anymore, but sweaty places, less of the sort of theater vibe. And I think I get that fulfilled when I play with Leanne a bit. So maybe it's just my reaction or so. I don't really know.
I mean, your work with The Burning Hell has often involved a lot of sweat and a lot of
totally.
So maybe in stepping away from that for a moment, you're longing for the
satisfaction. I think so, and I think I like playing folky stuff, but it's like I don't know. There's just like definitely a longing for like, you know, rock and roll in a bar.
Mm-hmm.
Rock and roll in a club or whatever, that just is something about it that's pretty magical to do. It's just so much fun when you see people like jumping up and down and freaking out. It's like the best feeling.
Yeah, it can feel more immediately interactive and more immediately present.
Yeah, definitely.
Sometimes.
And I just recorded a new record that we're going to start bringing some stuff out in the next little while, and it's sort of in the same vein as Soothsayer. It's like kind of a continuation from that sort of sonic palette. And it's, I think it's just part of like, I don't want really want to take the same steps I've done before, you know, like I know some people are like, they get in a groove of making a certain sort of thing and they kind of stay with it. And I'm kind of like trying to go different places. Like, I really want to make like a synth record. I don't know if I'll do it, but I've bought a bunch of synthesizers, so I guess I should make a record with them. but we'll see what happens with that. Like, that's another area that I'd really want to maybe dabble in. I've been listening to that Special Costello stuff quite a bit and just kind of blown away by how great that project is.
Yeah, it's extraordinary, and we're looking forward to seeing them this summer as well.
Oh man, it's amazing.
They've played Sackville many times before, but even though that band and that project has been going on for I think almost 10 years or so, like, they've never played the festival before.
Wow.
So we're thrilled to welcome them this year. As a musician, like, I love hearing the synths, and I am so, I can be so moved by those sounds, but as a personality, I just cannot engage with the gear.
Yeah,
kind of.
I know the learning curve on it is really high, and I think, like, as someone who comes from like a guitar-based, like, I've never really been much of a piano player. Like, I can kind of fake my way through a bunch of stuff, but it's definitely a different world. And I think maybe that's partially it too. Like, I really like love learning instruments and spending time with instruments and trying to like get better at them. So like, I spend a lot of time playing, like, I teach music as well, so like, I spend a lot of time like learning on the guitar things that I probably would never want to know how to play on my own. Like, I know how to play a lot of Ed Sheeran songs now from teaching them to people, or I learned how to play like most of Sweet Child of Mine like 2 nights ago, you know, things that I would never probably want to learn how to play, although secretly would really want to learn how to play. But yeah, you know, it's just like so with synths and stuff, it's like it's a whole different world. And there's, you know, there's people that are experts that I've been relying on for advice and things. And I have a really funny story to share if you're interested about synthesizers.
Absolutely.
So I was like wanting to buy a synthesizer, and I was like scouring the internet around Peterborough and found this guy who had a keyboard that I was looking for. It's called the Yamaha DX7, and he's like, yeah, I've got one of those, I'll meet you at this house. So I was like, okay, sounds good. So I go to meet him, and he's got like a whole car full of like old 80s analog synth gear, and he's like, I have all this other stuff, if you want it, just like give me another $50 and you can have it. It's like, it was my dad's and he passed away, and I was like, okay, that sounds great. And he couldn't find the keys to his car, so he was like this long hangout with this guy. And I was like, you look so familiar. Like, have I met you before? And he's like, no, but I was in a lot of movies. I used to work in the movie business. I was like, okay, what movies were you in? He's like, well, I was actually a stunt double for Chris Farley. So he was in, like, anytime he fell through a table or, like, injured himself in any way, it was this guy. He also was a stunt double for Meatloaf, like in any movies that Meatloaf was in. So I bought a bunch of synth gear from Chris Farley's body double.
Well, I'd like to compliment you on your storytelling chops, Nick, because you painted a perfect picture of what this man must look like without actually physically describing him.
Yeah, I was like, he looked like a cross between Chris Farley and Meatloaf. Big guy. He was really sweaty, which fit the bill.
And you got a bunch of gear off of him.
it was pretty cool. I was like, you don't play any synth? And he's like, no, I'm more of a rocker. I was like, of course you're more of a rocker. Makes sense.
It's like those sequences of letters and numbers that I just can't get. Like, I'm sure that your Yamaha DX7, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure that's like an amazing piece of gear, but I know that as soon as we hang up this phone call, like, I will forget what that's called and I won't be
able to, I'm the same. I have no idea what any of it is, but I just know that it like, it creates, like, I can get some cool sounds out of it. So, but it's like the old gear too. It's just such a, it's like such, like takes so much time to figure out how to use it.
Sure.
And I'm like an old man dabbling with my weird electronics for hours and hours and hours.
So we're, but we do have a Nick Ferio synth record in our future, it sounds like.
I hope so. I've got one song, so that's a start. From every seed, something will bloom.
Let's hope. You've got to go to work, I believe. Is that true?
Yeah, I got to get back over to work life.
The shop. Well, thank you so much for taking the time with us this morning, Nick.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Super nice to talk to you, my friend. We're looking forward to this summer.
Yeah, I can't wait. My whole family's going to come down, so it's going to be...
I was just going to ask.
It's going to be awesome. We're really excited.
Nice. Awesome. Well, everyone here is looking forward to seeing you guys, and we're looking forward to seeing you on stage several times, it sounds like.
Yeah, can't wait.
Awesome. Can we play some music?
Please.
Either something of yours, or if you have any special requests, we can play that as well.
Anything, man. You're the DJ.
Am I, though? Am I the DJ?
Am I? Yeah, whatever you want to play.
That was my exit.
If you want to play one of my songs, that'd be cool. And play maybe, I don't know, something else.
I got Quit Acting lined up here. Is that cool?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
This is the first song from Soothsayer. You referred to some new music you've been working on. Is there any new releases on the way that...
We've made a whole bunch of music videos, so I think we're going to put something up before Sappy. I don't know which song yet, because we've got a bunch of them, but there'll be something coming out really soon.
Awesome. So keep your eyes on
the internet.
On the internet. Nickferio.com? Nickferio.com?
Yeah, that's right. Or my Bandcamp will have something on there too.
There you go. Okay, thanks so much, my friend, and have a good day, and we'll talk real soon.
Sounds good. Thanks so much, Steve.
Bye, Nick.
Bye.
That was Nick Ferio calling in to Sappy Fest Radio. This is CHMA 106.9 FM in Sackville, New Brunswick, and this is the song Food Court. No, excuse me, the song Quit Acting by our friend Nick Ferio.
Was that sparkle in your eye just a flash in the pan? I soon decide to let go of my hand. It's your version of truth, served dry with vermouth.